That's what I said.
James is darn good. But he's better. And I'm better than both of them. No brag, just fact.
Back up on an old dirt road, next to a swamp full of toads, was a slanted wood shack with three little kids and a mama.
All right, gather around, drag up a stool. It's time for Liberty Lounge. 2 full hours of classic country music with a splash of news thrown in for good measure. Let's take a break from the current trials and tribulations and try to start our weekend out on a lighter note. Liberty Lounge starts right now.
Well, now, since it's Friday, and just to show my appreciation, we'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?
Do that again.
You are so stupid.
That's right.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
That's right.
There is nothing wrong with your radio.
That's right.
This is crazy. What's going on here?
I don't know. I love me.
I got $100 smoking in my billfold. I know I oughta save it, but it's burning a hole right through my pocket and into my skin. Come Monday morning, I'll be broke again. It's finally Friday, I'm free again. I got my motor running for a wild weekend. It's finally Friday, I'm out of control. Forget the working blues and let the good times roll.
All we want to do is pop your wad.
Sugar baby down the road, she's sitting on a radium and rocking on gold. We'll dance up a storm and later on tonight we'll be working on and doing all the wrong things right.
That's right.
It's finally Friday, play again. I got my motor running for a wild weekend. It's finally Friday, I'm out of control. Forget the working blues and let the good times roll.
I'll be back.
That's wonderful.
You're naked, is that okay?
Uh-huh.
Stop that. You go blind.
It's wet, but it stretches.
It's huge! Oh, I poofy in a pelly.
Good, bad, trouble, messed up!
I'll be hurting with my head in a vice. Tuesday, I'll be wondering if I'll ever survive. Wednesday and a Thursday, I'll be slowly tuning in. Friday, I'll be revving at my motor up.
And welcome to Liberty Lounge once again. The all music, mostly music version of the Shooting Bench happens every Friday night. Just about every Friday night. We miss one once in a while, but that's the nature of live radio. Sorry about Wednesday. We had every intention of doing a show. I had a good deal, program lined up for you, and we got involved in some projects in town and didn't get away until way late. It was, by the time I got here, it was about 20 minutes before showtime, and I was beat. I mean, we hadn't eaten, we hadn't showered. It was awful. So we decided to take the easy way out and not do it. So, like I said, it's the nature of live radio. It just happens sometimes. So, All right, we've got, I see there's a lot of stuff going on. I just got a notice here from the Tinker. Looks like we're having a, as we speak, there's something going on at Tower 1 at the University of Central Florida in Orlando. Shelter-in-place order has been given. Not sure what exactly is going on there, but it doesn't sound good. We'll have plenty to talk about come Monday. So the show I got lined up for you tonight, it's been about 5 years since we've done this one, 4 years maybe. And it was a big hit then, and I haven't just kind of let it set on ice here for a while. I think the time has come for us to bring this one out, dust it off, and play it again. It's a little different than what we normally do, but I think you'll enjoy it. So I'm going to go, I guess I better go look at my chat room, see number one, who's there, if anybody. And see Pumpkin Cats there. That's good. Tebow. Thank you, Tebow. 5x5. Appreciate that. Okay. Good deal. Who else we got? Click my little deal here. AZ Bound is tuned in. Good to see you, brother. I haven't seen you here for a while. And a Tinker. Got an anonymous there. Okay. All right. This podcast will be up probably before I go to bed tonight. If not, it'll certainly be up first thing. Well, tomorrow evening sometime. So, all right, we're going to get started on this. Let me find the right buttons to push. There we go. All right, I'll be sitting here listening with you because this is a good one. I really like this one. So I'll be back with you here in just a little bit. Stand by. On Liberty Lounge. We'll get into some regular music. We're going to do a lot of... I've been threatening to do this for a long time, and I keep forgetting about it. So I'm going to pick out some funny songs. There's a ton of good country parodies and stuff out there that we miss a lot because we get all wrapped up in this other stuff. So if you guys don't have a tremendous objection... All right, well, let's just get started here since we were talking about chickens a while ago.
Fowler's the name, Stu Fowler. I'm a rooster. Fighting's my racket. Cockfighting. I come all the way from Texas across the burning sand to wet my feathers in the Rio Grande. I've hobbled for miles through Mexico. I've come to kill a big rooster called Rojo. Doing it all for chicken feed. For a country red, Rojo's wild. His fame has spread for many a mile. The hens all cackle when Rojo's around, but Stu Fowler's here to put Big Red down. I'll give him chicken something to cackle about. It's mid-afternoon as I stand in the street of the Spanish town called Los Leghorns Retreat. At the end of the row, a cantina stands. Ain't nothing but a chicken coop. It's plainly the haunt of an outlaw band. The sign on the front reads La Grande Nesto. And it's there I know I'll find my foe, the fabled Rojo. I can hear foul language coming out of that honky-tonk. I strut down the street, the cock of the walk. I crow for Big Red to come out and talk. Through the swinging doors of the Grand Ernesto, his head erect and his tail feathers low, steps Rojo. I can tell he's a really baddie. His spurs are long and his eyes are green. An uglier cock I've never seen. He learned to be tough while he's in the pen. But I know his weakness. hands and gin. Then out of that honky-tonk and up to Rojo's side steps the prettiest little dance hall tackler in the West. Roosty Nuster, the southern fried feather duster. Gosh, she's pretty. I'd like to run my hands through that bed comb of hers. Rojo comes at me in a long, lanky run. Some people gather round to watch the fun. Bird to bird and beak to beak, I face Rojo and my heart gets weak. I crow and strut and I jump about, and then I take off in a run, cause I done chickened out.
Me again, Margaret.
They got me, Margaret.
You ain't gonna miss me, Margaret. I know that. But I miss you.
And when I get out, Margaret, I'm gonna come over there with a weed eater and a live chicken and some cool whip. We'll have a big old guy.
Why, yes, ma'am, you can post bond right over here.
Mr. McBain, please.
That'll be $350.
And, how much for those handcuffs?
$350. to this place that what you might call it in. You know where it is. Oh, we were dancing around and I was holding her a little too tight. I broke the doohickey off of her thing of my titty glass. Well, we looked all around and finally found this little doodad. But the thing of the bug was broke and oh, what's your name got mad. I tried to put it back together, but the broom-a-digger wouldn't fit right. I broke the doohickey off of her thingamajig last night. Your name, she went off with Hoosie. I'm happy to say. I'm a sitting here drinking these doozies.
I can do you.
I broke that doohickey off of her thingamajig last night. Man, you should have seen old what's your name crawling around on the tables, picking up them little doo bubbles, you know. They fix me another one of them new jiggers. Let's get on with it.
Deep within. No use applauding for that, did you? Well, in 1959, we took a little hike with our scouting master down the lake in Eka Night. We took a little pizza and we took some sauerkrauts. We marched along together till we seen the Girl Scouts.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing sticks together. And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
Well, we crept up to the water and we seen the girls a-swimming. They must have been 100 of them, pretty young women. They looked so fine, even birds forgot to sing. We laid down in the poison oak and didn't say a thing.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing sticks together. And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
You want to pick a little? You'll never get rich. Tell that drummer to hold it down. He's drowning me out up here.
I think he's trying to start his own show. Buddy.
Hold it down.
Hold it down just a little, buddy. Would you?
You can be replaced, you know.
Just hold it down just a little more. I can still hear you.
Well, the counselor said we could take them by surprise if we didn't say a word till we looked them in the eyes. We kept real still and we had our eyes glued. We seen how they were dressed. They were swimming in the well. They
ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast even we couldn't catch them from Lake Anika Night all the way to Buffalo.
Well, we marched around till everyone was spooked. We rested for a minute and our forces we regrouped. Then we seen the girls behind some evergreens, captured by a company of United States Marines.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing girls' sticks.
Oh, rubbing sticks together.
And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
Song is a Wildwood Flower. Now the Wildwood Flower is an old country classic.
gained a whole new popularity. The song isn't any more popular, but the flower is doing real good. Wildwood flower grew wild on the farm, and we never know what it was called. Some said it's a flower, and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother, and I reached down for a weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry, and then everything was gone. Didn't know what happened, but I knew it beat the hell out of sniffing burlap. I come to, my brother was there, and he said, "What's wrong with your eyes?" I said, "I don't know. I was chewing on the weed." He said, "Let me give it a try." Spent the rest of that day and most of that night trying to find my brother Bill. Caught up with him about 6 o'clock the next morning, naked, singing on the windmill. He said he flew up there. I had to fly up and get him down. He's about half crazy. The very next day, we picked a bunch of them weeds and we put them in the sun to dry. Then we mashed them up and cleaned them off. Put them in the corn cob pipe. Smoking them wildwood flowers got to be a habit. We never seen no harm. Oh, we thought it was kind of handy. Take a trip and never leave the farm. They go puff that wildwood weed. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. All good things got to come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day this fella from Washington come by and spied them and turned white as a sheet. And he dug and he burned and he dug and he killed all our cute little weeds. And then he drove away. We just smiled and waved, sitting there on that sack of seeds. Y'all come back now, you hear?
Yes, they all came to see me. No, I don't sing. I said I could. I didn't say I was going to. No, but I really could. I remember all of these pretty much by heart. I sat here and lip sync to every one of them. And I can, and I don't know why. I don't know why our household, I guess just because everybody in our family, both sides, you know, it's so much different back then. It seems like no matter what we were doing, it was always, however serious it was, there was still wisecracks and everybody being a smart aleck, and we just always had fun. And we always, you know, my dad, my uncles, my granddad always sang this kind of stuff, and I had the Homer and Jethro stuff. I've still got albums by Homer and Jethro, and that was something that I remember from my grandma and granddad's house. Now, nowadays, you let your kids sit and watch these stupid damn shows and play games on the phone and on the computer and all this stuff. I sat there and played with little trucks and guns and whatnot and listened to these songs over and over and over and over, and I remember all of them really well. So that's the difference in how we were raised, you know, I think back then. But anyway, this stuff tickles me. I like all of it.
It ain't legal hunting alligator down in the swamp, boy. $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, the $50 now, $60 will give me $60 now, $75, $75 another $85 on the mind there. There was a boy in Arkansas who wouldn't listen to his ma when she told him he should go to school. He'd sneak away in the afternoon, pick up a little walk, and pretty soon you'd find him at the local auction barn. He'd stand and listen carefully, then pretty soon he began to see how the auctioneer could talk so rapidly. He said, oh my, it's do or die, I've got to learn that auction cry, gotta make my mark and be an auctioneer. $25 bid, and I'll bet a dollar 30, will they give me 30, make a 30 bid, and mama, $30, will they give me 30, bid a $30 bid. $30 bid, and I'll 35, will they give me 35, I'll make a 35, and bid a 35, who would have bid at a $35 bid. As time went on, he did his best, and all could see, he didn't jest, he practiced all of it, both night and day. Son, we just can't stand to have a mediocre man selling things at auction using our good name. I'll send you off to auction school, then you'll be nobody's fool. You can take your place among the best. $35 bid, another $40, $40 when they give me 40, make it 40 bid, I'm all $40, then we live 40.
Down the road. fellow with green teeth. And I was almost to the door when the biggest one said, "You tip your hat to this lady, son." And when I did, all that hair fell out from underneath. Now the last thing I wanted was to get in a fight in Jackson, Mississippi on a Saturday night, especially when there was three of them and only one of me. But they all started laughing and I felt kind of sick, and I knew I'd better think of something pretty quick. So I just reached out and kicked old Green Teeth right in the knee. Now he let out a yell that'd curl your hair, but before he could move, I grabbed me a chair and said, "Watch him, folks, because he's a thoroughly dangerous man." Well, you may not know it, but this man's a spy. He's an undercover agent for the FBI, and he's been sent out here to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. He was still bent over holding on to his knee, but everybody else was looking and listening to me, and I laid it on thicker and heavier as I went. I said, "Would you believe this man has gone as far as tearing Wallace stickers off the bumpers of cars, and he voted for George McGovern for president?" "Well, he's a friend of them long-haired hippie-type picko fags. I bet you he's even got a commie flag tacked up on the wall inside of his garage. He's a snake in the grass, I tell you guys. He may look dumb, but that's just a disguise. He's a mastermind in the ways of espionage." They all started looking real suspicious at him, and he jumped up and said, "Now just wait a minute, Jim. You know he's lying. I've been living here all of my life. I'm a faithful follower of Brother John Birch, and I belong to the Antioch Baptist Church. And I ain't even got a garage. You can call home and ask my wife." Then he started saying something about the way I was dressed, but I didn't wait around to hear the rest. I was too busy moving and hoping I didn't run out of luck. And when I hit the ground, I was making tracks, and they were just taking my car down off the jack. So I threw the man a 20 and jumped in and fired that mother up. Mario Andretti would have sure been proud of the way I was moving when I passed that crowd coming out the door and heading toward me in a trot. Guess I should have gone ahead and run, but somehow I just couldn't resist the fun of chasing them all just once around the parking lot. Well, they're headed for their car, but I hit the gas and spun around and headed them off at the pass. I was slinging gravel and putting a ton of dust in the air. I had them all out there stepping and fetching like their heads were on fire and their asses was catching, but I figured I'd better go ahead and split before the cops got there. When I hit the road, I was really wheeling, had the gravel flying and rubber squealing, and I didn't slow down till I was almost to Arkansas. Well, I think I'm going to reroute my trip. I wonder if anybody would think I'd flipped if I went to L.A. via Omaha.
Hopper, I know you just didn't say hams. That's got to rate one of the top two nastiest beers in the United States. That's, from the land of clear blue water and all that stuff. But
it was all...
let's just go ahead and do it again.
To keep from crying. Sometimes it seems so useless to read.
Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song. I wrote him back a letter, and I told him it was not the perfect country and western song because he hadn't said anything at all about mama, her train, her trucks, her prison, or getting drunk. Well, he sat down and wrote another verse to the song, and he sent it to me, and after reading it, I realized that my friend had written the perfect country and western song. And I felt obliged to include it on this album. The last verse goes like this here. Well, I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison. And I went to pick her up in the rain. But before I could get to the station in the pickup truck, she got
take a little break from our regularly scheduled programming here and bring little Anna in here. She's going to sing a song that you heard a while ago. This gal's 8 years old. Check this out. 8 years old. Give her a hand. That was little Anna, 8 years old, doing the auctioneer. Done a pretty good job of it.
Well, holy mackerel there. Hello, Wall.
I didn't see you standing there. Did I hurt you? Hello. Boy, I sure did hit you.
News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation. On the scene at the supermarket, there seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was just standing over there by the tomatoes, and here he come.
running through the pole beans, through the fruits and veggies, naked as a jaybird. Ethel's over there in the jams, jellies, preserves, and pickles. I hollered over her. I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" She dropped a whole jar of kumquats and fell back into the sweet midget side. Had us too late, she'd done been in since.
Here he comes.
Boogity, boogity.
Here he comes.
Boogity, boogity.
And he ain't wearing no
clothes. Oh, yes, they're calling the street. That thing on 2 feet. He's just as proud as he can be of his anatomy. He gonna give us a tea. Oh, yes, they're calling the street. Let's show off his physique. If there's an audience to be found, he's squeaking it round by the public critique.
Hello once again, everyone. Your Action News reporter on the scene at the gas station. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was just sitting here trying to get some air in my car there, and he disappeared out of traffic. Comes streaking around the grease track there, didn't have nothing on but a smile. Ethel's in there getting her a cold drink. I hollered in there, I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" Too late, she done been lit twice for right there in front of the shock absorbers.
He ain't
boogity, boogity.
He ain't
a boogity, boogity.
He ain't nothing to run in the
news. Well, yes, they call him the street. He's always making the news, wearing just his tennis shoes, that you could call him unique.
Hello once again, everyone. Your news reporter in the booth at the gym, covering the disturbance of the basketball playoff. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. It's halftime. I just went down there to get Ethel a snow cone. Here he comes, right out of the cheap seats. Right down the middle of the court there, didn't have nothing on but his high-top Reeboks. He was dribbling, made a jump shot, got out through the concession. I hollered up Ethel, I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" Too late, she done got a free shot. Grandstanded her right there in front of the home team. Oh, yes, they call him the street. Whoa, here he comes again. That thing, who's that me? Ethel, is that you, Ethel? Where do you think you're going? Is that me?
You can't
be gonna give up on me.
An ordinance in the town, they said we'd have to tear it down. That little old shack out back so dear to me. Though the health department said its day was over and dead, it will stand forever in my memory. Don't let them tear that little brown building down. Don't let them tear that precious building down. Don't let them tear. Through the snow, out to that house behind my old hound dog, where I would sit me down to rest like a snowbird on his nest, and I'd read that Sears and Roebuck catalog. Oh, I would hum a happy tune, peeping through the quarter moon, as my daddy's kin had done so much before. It was in that quiet spot daily cares could be forgot, and it gave the same relief
most ever.
Don't let them tear that little brown building down. Don't let them
tear
that precious building down. Don't let them
tear
that dear old building down. There's not another like it in the country or the town. Fair, but I could dream a future there. Build my castle to the yellow jacket's drone. I could orbit around the sun, fight with General Washington, or
pictures on the wall. It was air conditioned in the winter time. Oh, it was just a humble hut, but its door was never shut, and a man could get inside without a dime. Don't let them tear that little brown building down. Don't let them tear that precious building down. Don't let them tear that dear old building down. There's not another like it in the country or the town.
Thank you a lot for your sympathy. This sure is a nice, clean-looking bunch of people. I see one fella's got a nice haircut there, showing through his scalp. Well, we just know two songs, and we always sing one of them first. Which one you want to do next?
Let's do the other.
All right. This little thing we'd like to dedicate to Jethro's wife. She's out in the car in the trunk. She's a blonde this week, and I think she looks awful good in that new beach outfit you got for her.
We had a little trouble on that the first day she wore it.
It's a two-piece beach outfit, ain't it?
Yeah, a shovel and a pail.
He's a little worried about his wife. She went out and got her one of these new sack dresses, and it fits her. That's a lot to worry about, you know. This is a little tune called He Didn't Like Her Apartment, So He Knocked Her Flat.
Oh, let me go, let me go, let me go, beloved. Let me scat like a cat away from you. You're too fat in the first place, you know it's true. You're too fat in the second place, too.
When I said that, your bustle was cute as could be. You said, Homer, that's no bustle, that's me.
Oh, turn me loose, please reduce your caboose, blubber. Pound for pound, you're just too round for me.
Over my solo, please.
Don't play over my talking.
She had nine buttons on her nightgown, but she could only fasten
I deserve every bit of it. You fellas must quit playing now. Jethro's mad, I think. What's the matter? Are you mad?
No, I'm not mad. I'm used to having my solos interrupted and broken up like that. It doesn't bother me in the least.
You mad, Jonah?
No, I'm not mad. I told you I'm not
mad. You sure you're not mad?
I'm not mad.
You sure?
All right, if it'll make you any happier, I am a little burned up over you.
Well, you don't look mad.
I was doing real good up until the time gangrene set in. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to finish that because it's very seldom that I get to play a solo. We'll take it at the letter A, boys. So feel free to lay out.
I think you better get back there in the band where you belong.
I can't do it. They're union.
Would you play that last spasm again there, please?
Same place, Floyd.
Excuse me, I thought you was playing it wrong there at first. That was a whole lot better, thank you. When you had
No.
Sound like Archie Campbell here. When you had your appendix removed at last, they didn't know whether to operate or blast. Oh, let me go, let me go, let me go, blubber. Set me free, your gist too much for me.
The hawk of a man with the beard in his hand. Looked like a drunk old fool, and I knew if I hit him right, well, I could knock him off of that stool. But everybody, they said, watch out, hey, that's Tiger Man McCool. He's had a whole lot of fights, and he's always come out winner. Yeah, he's a winner. But I'd had myself about five too many, and I walked up tall and proud. I faced his back, and I faced the fact that he had never stooped or bowed. I said, Tiger Man, you're a pussycat, and a hush fell on the crowd. I said, let's you and me go outside and see who's a winner. Bar with one big hairy hand, and he braced against the wall. He slowly looked up from his beard. My God, that man was tall. He said, boy, I see you're a scrapper, so just before you fall, I'm gonna tell you just a little about what it means to be a winner. He said, now you see these bright white smiling teeth, you know they ain't my own. Mine rolled away like chiclets down the street in San Antonio. But I left that person cursing, nursing seven broken bones, and he only broke three of mine. That makes me the winner. Sit now behind this grin. I got a steel pin that holds my jaw in place. A trophy of my most successful motorcycle race. And each morning when I wake and touch this scar across my face, it reminds me of all I got by being a winner. This broken back was a dying act of a handsome Harry Clay. That sticky sense in that night I stole his wife away. But that woman, she gets uglier
and she gets meaner every day. But I got her, boy, that's what makes me a winner. He said, you gotta speak loud when you challenge me, son, 'cause it's hard for me to hear with this twisted neck and these migraine pains and this big old cauliflower ear. And if it wasn't for this glass eye of mine, why, I'd shed a happy tear to think of all that you're gonna get by being a winner. I got operatic elbow, boy. I got dislocated knees from picking fights with thunderstorms and charging into trees. And my nose been broke so often, I might lose it if I sneeze. And son, you say you still want to be a winner. Now you remind me a lot of my younger days with your knuckles a-clenching white. But boy, I'm gonna sit right here and sip this beer all night. And if there's something that you got to gain or prove by winning some silly fight, well, okay, I quit. I lose, you're the winner. So I stumbled from that barroom, not so tall and not so proud. And behind me I still hear the hoots of laughter. Still see, and my nose still works, and my teeth are still in my mouth. And you know, I guess that makes me the winner.
Most everybody in this great country has heard my story about the coon hunt. I want to review it with you just for a moment and get you up to date if by chance you hadn't heard it. Because this whole nation is worried about John Eubanks, what's up in that tree. They are worried about him, and John's squalling and bellering and asking for some help. And I left him up in that tree when I told my last story. And I said, Mr. Barron, that thing's eating John up. What in the world are we going to do? And I commenced to squalling. John was a first cousin of mine. And I'd wipe them tears, and I squalled, and I said, Mr. Barron, let's do something. That thing's eating John up. Four of the dogs had done got scared and left and went to the house. Mr. Barron said, boys, we have got to do something. I don't know nothing to do except see can we make enough a racket here on the ground to get that thing's attention, and maybe it'll turn John loose and jump out of that tree. He said, you boys twist them dogs' ears, make them howl. Scream hysterical. Jerry, you get a hold to that muscadine vine over there and commence to snatching it and screaming to the top of your voice. I'll holler loud as I can and shoot this pistol 6 times. And maybe that thing will turn John loose. Folks, that thing not only jumped out of that tree, but it whooped every dog on the ground. Tore both britches legs out of Mr. Barron's overhauls and run off. We ain't never hunted in that neck of them woods ever again. Come on down, John. That thing's gone. Come on down, John. That thing's gone. John started easing down that tree. That old sweet gum rosin was getting in them places where that thing had clawed him. That bark on that sweet gum tree was stinging him, and he was squalling. And just as John's foot hit the ground, my brother Sonny mocked that thing. Wow! John went right back to the top. All the way to the top. We're just joking, John. We're just joking. Come on down. John eased down that tree finally, and I armed him up and put him in my arms, and I broke and run to the house. I was squalling, and I laid him down on the front porch, and I said, Mama, Mama, come here quick. Bring every bit of the medicine we got in the house. We got a Dr. John. Something has eat him up. My mother scrapped up all of the medication she could find in our shotgun modest home, brought it out there and set it down on the porch by John, and all she brought was black drawth and 3/6. I said, Mama, John don't need to swallow nothing. We need to daub something on him. We finally loaded John up in a pickup truck and took him over to Liberty, Mississippi, and the late Dr. Quinn sewed John up, and John lived to hunt again.
First of all, I want you to know that I come from Route 4, Liberty, Mississippi. Now, that's 12 miles west of Macomb, Mississippi, 65 miles due northeast of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and 116 miles due north of New Orleans, Louisiana. It was there that I first saw the light of day out at Amick County, September the 28th, 1926. I was born there. Now, as I grew up in that community, the only extracurricular activities that we engaged in was to go coon hunting or go to revival meeting if we had a crop laid by. And that's all we did except work. And this particular day that I want to tell you about is one evening when we were going coon hunting. We had a pack of hounds. When we went to mill with our corn to get it ground up, we'd get some ground for dog bread, and we'd get some ground for just regular corn meal for human consumption. This particular day, we wasn't too busy. All we had done is just cut down a few fence rows, shut and shelled some corn and went to mill, drew up some water because that was wash day, helped get this sow back, what rooted out from under the net wire fence, sharpened two sticks of stove wood real sharp and pegged them down over the bottom wire of the fence where the hog couldn't root out no more. And had a rat killing. If I'm lying, I'm dying. We had rat killings in those days. Well, this particular day after we got through the rat killing, I walked out on the front porch and I hollered. And them dogs come out from under the house barking. They knew we was going coon hunting. And I hollered again, and my neighbor way across the sage patch hollered back. And that meant I'll meet you halfway. We met in the middle of that sage patch, and he had his dogs, old Brummy and Queen and Spot, and I had Tory and Little Red and old Trailer. And we went out into the swamps, and we started hunting. Oh, we was having such a fine time. Caught four great big ones. I heard a racket. And it scared me, and I whooped my carbide light, what I had wired to my cap around there, and I was looking in the vicinity of where I heard the racket coming from. And the beam of light hit a man right in the face, and it likened to have scared me slapped to death because we was hunting on this man's place. I said, "Mr. Barron, is that you?" He said, "Yes, Jerry. What are y'all doing? We hunting. How many have you caught? Four great big ones." He said, "Well, boys, glad to see you. Y'all want to spend the rest of the evening hunting with me and John?" Well, I looked, and lo and behold, that was John Eubanks, a man that lived on Mr. Barron's place. John Eubanks was a great American. He was a professional tree climber. He didn't believe, I'm telling you the truth, he didn't believe in shooting no coon out of no tree. It was against his upbringing. He taught us from birth, from the day we were born till the age we could keep listening to him, give everything a sporting chance. Whatever you do, give it a sporting chance. He'd have been a great conservationist today if he'd be here. And John said, "Take a crosscut saw, coon hunting with you. When you tree a coon, hold the dogs and cut the tree down. Or either climb the tree and make the coon jump in amongst the dogs. Give him a sporting chance." A lot of times we climb a tree and make a coon jump in amongst 20 dogs, but at least he had the option of whooping all them dogs and walking off if he wanted to. This is strictly left up to the coon. So I said, "Mr. Barron, we'd be glad to go hunting with you." You know, he was a rich man. He had sold a lot of cotton during the First World War for a dollar a pound. He had some world-renowned dogs. And we hollered three or four times, and they started hunting. And we listened, and directly, old Brummy didn't bark at nothing but a coon. He had a deep voice. And when he cut out on him, it was a coon. Don't worry about no possum or no bobcat. Brummy was running a coon. And an old Trailer and old Highball and them famous dogs and Mr. Barron's got in there with them, and old John Eubanks would holler, "Hey, speak to him." And my brother's son would holler, "Hey, look fine." And oh, it was beautiful. Now, y'all get this picture. About that time they treed, we rushed down into the swamps. And there the dogs were, treed up the biggest sweet gum tree in all of Amit River swamps. It was huge. You couldn't reach around this tree. There wasn't a limb on it for a while. Way up there, huge tree. And I looked around at John, and I said, "John, I don't believe you can climb that tree." And it hurt John's feelings. He pooched his lips out, got fighting mad. He said, "There ain't a tree in all these swamps that I can't climb." And he got his Brogan shoes off, and he eased up to that sweet gum tree, and he hung his toenails in that bark, and he got his fingernails in there, and he kept easing up the tree, working his way toward that bottom limb, and he finally got to it, and he started on up into this big tree. "Knock him out, John. It won't be long. And John worked his way on up to the top of the tree, and whoo, what a big one. And he reached around in his overalls and got that sharp stick, and he drawed back and he punched the coon. But it wasn't a coon. It was a lynx. We call them souped-up wildcats in Amen County. And that thing had great big tushies coming out of its mouth and red big claws on the end of its feet. And people, that thing attacked it, John, up in the top of that tree. Whoa! You could hear John squall. What's the matter with John? I don't have no idea. What in the world's happening to John? Knock him out, John. Whoa! This thing's killing me. The whole top of the tree was shaking. The dogs got to biting the bark of the tree and fighting one another underneath the tree. And I was kicking them back. You dogs, get away. What's the matter with John? Knock him out, John. Woo! This thing's killing me. And John knew that Mr. Barron told him a pistol in his belt to shoot snakes with. And he kept howling, "Woo! Shoot this thing. Have mercy, this thing killing me. Shoot this thing." And Mr. Barron said, "John, I can't shoot up in there. I might hit you." John said, "Well, just shoot up in here amongst us. One of us got to have some relief."
I'm going to tell you some bedtime stories. Of course, you know you can't tell bedtime stories anymore like you used to. Now, when I was a little boy, I enjoyed those tales about the three little bears and Goldilocks and things like that. It was wonderful. But you can't do that anymore. These kids are too smart. They see too many things. I started telling my little boy, he's 9. He'll be 10 in October if you don't get too smart with me. I sat him up on my knee and I started telling him about the three little bears. He said, "Oh, Daddy, don't give me that bear jazz." He said, "In the first place, I don't believe in the three little bears." He said, "I think Goldilocks was a square and Jack ain't never had a beanstalk that long." So I changed things around a little bit and told him a bedtime story and kind of twisted it up, turned the words around. I want to give the kid credit for his intelligence. This is the way I told him the story. I'll tell it to you kids. Once upon a time, there was P. Little Thriggs. Well, actually, there was more than that. There was Mama Mig and Papa Fig. Papa Fig, that don't work, does it? But anyhow, that's all together, that was 5 little figs. And one day, the first of these P. Little Thriggs, he was... he was walking down the road and he saw a man widening a wagon. And he said, "Hey, mister," said, "would you sell me that strode to law?" He said, "I want to heal me a bounce. I want to build me a horse trouse." So he got the straw and he built him a horse trouse. And along came the big wad bull. And he said, "Hey, Piddleig, let me in." Piddleig says, "Not by the chair of my henny hen hen." He said, "I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll hold your blouse down." So he huffed and he puffed and he hold his blouse down. And he ate up the Piddleig. Then the second of the P. Little Thriggs, he went off down the road and he saw another man widen a ragged. And he said, "Hey, mister," he said, "would you sell me that stole of licks? I want to heal me a bounce." I'm going to build me a hick stouse. So he built him a stouse out of hicks. And along came the big wad wolf. And he said, hey, Piddleig, let me in. Piddleig says, not by the chair of my handy hen hen. He said, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll hold your blouse down. So he huffed and he puffed and he hold his blouse down and he ate up the Piddleig. Then the third of the pea little thrigs, he was a little smarter, Teddy. He went off down the road and he saw another man wagon a riding. Wagon a riding. Wiggin' a rodent. And he said, hey, mister, would you sell me that bro to licks? I want to heal me a bounce, and I'm going to build me a hick browse. So he built him a browse out of hicks. Along came the big bad wolf, and he said, well, it was a big wad wolf, wasn't it? Yeah. He said, hey, Piddleig. He said, let me in. He said, not by the chair of my henny hen hen. He said, I'll huff and I'll huff and I'll hold your blouse down. So he huffed and he puffed and he puffed and he huffed, and he couldn't hide his blouse down. You gotta be careful. He stuck his head up to the window and he said, all right, Piddleig, said, you're absolutely root. Said, I can't hold your blouse down, but he said to himself, said, I'll fix him, said, I'll climb up on the roof and I'll chide down the slimney. So he climbed on up on the roof and he chid down the slimney. But the third of these pea little thrigs, he was smart. He knew what was going on. So he ran in the kitchen and got him a great big pot of boiling water hotter. And he put this pot of boiling water hotter over the fireplace, and the big wad wolf hit it, and as soon as he hit that water, he said, ouch. He said, this is extremely painful to a wolf's gluteus maximum. So the third of the pea little thrigs, he ran in the kitchen right quick and he got him a real narp shife. And he cut that big wad wolf open and got his two little brothers out. And they had wolf stew for supper. And friends, that's good. Seasoned just right, you know, with pig ears and stuff. And they danced and sang and the pea little thrigs lived heavily after afterwards.
Growing up, word got that the best coon hunter in the world was a fellow that lived at East Macomb, Mississippi. And we done sent him word by the mail rider, there ain't no coon dog in the world good as Highball. Don't you ever say or tell nobody that there is. We don't believe it none. Well, we got us up a little contest. They said, yeah, this feller will catch more coons on a night's hunt than y'all will. Well, he come driving up in his pickup truck to East Fork School. That's where we met. Fella let the end gate down on one of them pickups, and that was a cage, and sitting up in the back of that pickup was a big brown monkey. Marcel said, whoo, look, don't let that thing out. Said, he looks, oh, said, keep him in there. Said, he looks too much like folks to be getting out of that. You leave him up in that pickup truck. Fella said, y'all don't understand. I use a dog with the monkey. I just want one good tree dog, and I'll show you how to catch more raccoons. The hides are expensive. And I make a good living with that monkey, coon hunting. Ma says, and I ain't taking my dog with that trashy thing. Clovis said, I'll take old June and we'll go. So all of us followed, and old June hadn't gone very far, and she treed. Now, any coon hunter will know that sometimes a raccoon will get up in a tree and he'll tap the tree, go out on a limb and jump into another tree, go out on a limb and jump into another one, and come down way out yonder. Well, that's the art of being a good coon dog. You circle around, make for sure he ain't tapped the tree, and he's up there if you say he's there.
Well, old June Tree, to turn that monkey loose, had him on a chain, and people, he had a flashlight in his left hand and a pistol in his right hand. And up that tree he went, boogity, 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 right up that tree, went all over the tree, shining that light and had that gun, looking everywhere, out on each limb, shining, shining, shining. And what he did, he find the coon and shoot him, and the coon falls out. Well, he hadn't found no coon. Down the tree he come. Thumb cocked that pistol, put it up to old Gene's head, Clovis his dog, and said, boom, just killed him. Graveyard dead, right there. Clovis said, man, what the world do you mean? That trashy thing has killed my dog. And the fellow what owned the monkey said, Clovis, there ain't but one thing that monkey hates worse than a raccoon, and that's a lying coon dog.
The Principal Beatrice. And it hoes happened that there was a wuggly old witch. She didn't dock her because the Principal Beatrice was just as put as she was gritty. So the wuggly old witch spassed a keeble L and made the Principal Beatrice slow to geep. Then the wuggly old itch went around reeking with slaughter and bellin' ever tidy that the Principal Beatrice would slow on geepin' until Bum Soddy Lell and Fub with her and kissed her so she could ache and walk. And chortled the wuggly old itch, Bo Noddy will loll and fub with Benny Oddy, who's a teepaw to slime. And so the Principal Putress became known as Beeping Slooty. One day, a buller fresh man copped by the station. And when Bo Noddy answered his dock at the door, he walked into Linda and saw Beeping Slooty. Now, he didn't care whether she was neeping her slots. Because when he saw how wire she fuzzed, he gloped the brass and bimed into the cled room where Beeping Slooty was sound asleep. So he counted a place on the nip of her toes, and Beeping Slooty opened her eyes. "Die mudness," she said. "My mare must be a hess."
Ah!
certainly says, said the Buller Fresh Man. And then Sullivan Udden, the Buller Fresh Man, knelt on his knees and hooked her by the tan. He said, I'm not really a Buller Fresh Man. I'm a hung and prancing yinz. But a wuggly old itch cut a purse on me and canished me from my bingdom until I could sell a beeping slooty a Buller Fresh. You have spoken the bell. Will you marry me? Beeping slooty said, now, strizn't this ain't. You've spoken my bell, too. Yes, I will marry you because we have so cutch and mama. And, Mo, they were serried. And one of the durst things they fed was to have the wuggly old itch pressed into kissing so she didn't coo any more dicked weeds. So remember this. If you happen to spawl under a feeble L and you want to end up threatening on a song, don't ever cast up a pants to kiss a beeping slooty.
Pennant Oil Association of America had their meeting at a big hotel down in Houston, Texas. And they got this PhD fella from way up in the Midwest to come and make a speech. Now, folks, he forevermore made a speech.
How's it going, Harvey?
It's so inflamed and enthused all of those oil folks that they called the executive committee together and they said, listen, let's hire that fella. And let's put him out on the road making this same speech just to wherever he can gather up a crowd, let him talk to him. And he did. Bought him a big car and got him a chauffeur with a blue serge suit. And this man just started traveling all over the country making this speech. Well, after they had been doing this for about 8 months, going down the four-lane highway, that chauffeur looked in the rearview mirror and he said, Professor, what? Said, there ain't no fairness in this country. My good man, why would you make a statement like that? He said, I can make that cotton-picking speech as good as you can. And I'm barely making a living on what y'all paying me, and you getting rich. He said, sir, I want you to know that I got my B.S. degree. He said, don't start all wherever you got all them things. I ain't interested in them. I done heard you make that speech once a day for 8 months. I done memorized it. I'm a better speech maker than you are, and I can make the cotton-picking speech better than you can. It's just that simple. He said, I'm fixing to go to a major university, and they ain't never seen me. They don't need to know what I look like. You pull over to the roadside park up here, we are about the same size. And we'll trade clothes, and I'll break you from sucking eggs. We'll put you up there on the stage and let you make the speech, and I'll be the chauffeur and sit out in the congregation, and I'll watch you make a fool out of yourself. That suits me fine. Let's change clothes. Now, y'all get this picture. They drive up to the big major university. The real professor with the blue serge suit on driving the big car. The chauffeur sitting on the back seat with a little briefcase in his lap. 22,000 people in the field house. Standing room only, the great PhD, what graduated from the great school of mines, was coming to speak. And they introduced him, and just as he got up to speak, there was the real professor sitting on the back row with the hard-billed chauffeur's cap in his lap, peeping at him. Now, y'all talking about making a speech. Whoo! He forevermore shell down the corn. He shucked it right on down to the cop. They throwed their books in the air, wallered on the floor, hollered, give him a standing ovation, screamed, and they finally got order restored. And the president of the school got up and said, well, we have about 10 minutes before the bell rings. I wonder if y'all would like to ask this gentleman any questions. Yes, would you like to ask him any questions? Well, y'all have seen the type. A fella got up in the about halfway back with big horn-rimmed glasses on, a real egghead, had books under each arm. He said, Professor, if one of those dinosaurs died what roamed the earth 2 billion years ago, and his carcass rotted,
and the Earth's atmosphere built up layer after layer after layer to 5,986 feet. And 2 billion years later, a drill bit drilling a well on a wildcat venture bores through this decayed carcass. What will the pH of the soil be that's contained in the core of the drill bit? And what will be the name of the stratosphere? This fellow just stood there and looked at him. You could have heard a pin drop. And this fellow said, "Mr. Student, as long as I've been in this business, that's about the most simplest question I ever been asked since I've been speaking. I'm surprised they'd let a man that don't know no more than you know get in this university." And just to show you how simple the question is, my chauffeur's in the back of the room. I'll ask him to stand up now.
And let me ask you this. Do you think Jimmy is roaming around the White House tonight trying to find a meatloaf to warm himself up on?
I don't think the cod is eating meatloaf.
Who the hell are they? They're only from Georgia. Oh, let me tell you something. I am so sick of Washington and all its works and all them politicians down there and them congressmen and the congressmen. Boy, I'll bet you won't find none of them congressmen turning down their electric blankets tonight. Which if they did, their secretaries would get up and go home. Oh, readers, the Democrats is doing the whole thing. The Democrats.
And you put them in there.
That's the face you had on you when you come back in the polls. Well, the Democrats' way of running this country is to go tell us all how we ought to make sacrifices. God, they're great on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas, so we're going to have to walk it.
The Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you.
Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty. Listen, my whole point is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. No, you know that it's a conspiracy there. Listen. For years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove, electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper.
The most famous of all the voodoo queens that ever existed is Marie Laveau down in Louisiana. A lot of weird, ungodly tales about Marie. She's supposed to have a lot of magic potions and spells and curses.
Down in Louisiana, where the black trees grow, lives a voodoo lady named Marie Laveau. She got a black cat tooth and a mojo bone. And anyone who wouldn't leave her alone, she go. See? and she wiggled and she said, hey, hey, I'm getting ready for my wedding day. But oh, a handsome Jack, he said, goodbye, Marie. You're too damn ugly for a rich man like me. Then Marie started mumbling, her fangs started gnashing, her body started trembling, and her eyes started flashing, and she went, the man done gone. So if you ever get down where the black trees grow, and meet a voodoo lady named Marie Laveau, if she ever asks you to make her your wife, man, you better stay with her for the rest of your life, or it'll be
hard to keep. That's it, guys. Fastest 2 hours in internet radio, no doubt about it. Had a lot of fun. There's a lot of songs I haven't heard there for many, many years, so I thought I'd throw them in there. Nothing serious tonight. The most serious thing we had was The Auctioneer. And that's a pretty lively song. We can live with one like that. So, anyway, hope you guys have a great weekend. I'm out of here. Got things to do, place to go, and people to see. And Amy and I will both be back in here with you Monday. Thanks for joining us. Come on, Christmas. Let's go. Okay, that about wraps it up for another edition of Liberty Lounge on this Friday evening. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Be sure and join me again Monday morning for Amy's show, Living Way Out Here at 8 o'clock Pacific Time, and The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Remember that your life is a gift from God. How you spend it is your gift to Him. Good night.
And it's all over. You on the phone just to find out what was wrong, and the things you said made my suspicions real. You said tonight again you have to stay with this sick friend, but that story I'm not buying. It's all over, but the crying. It's all over, but the crying. I never would have thought you were lying. It sounded so true. You. Now I'll say my goodbye.